and gentlemen, you're live from Eat Sleep Suplex Retreat on Strathclyde
Fusion. What's happening, everybody, and welcome to this another episode of Eat Sleep Suplex Retreat. Live, 14 stories high in Glasgow. We are taking a pit stop today on our road to WrestleMania, bringing you some excellent chat, debatable banter, and Dave. I am your host this week, Stephen Wilson, and joining me is a panel similar to last week, plus Dave. First, he's calmed down ever so slightly after last week's disappointment, so much so that we've had to keep him very far separated from Dave. It's the Fury of Fife, it's Nathan Fisher.
Hi Stephen, yes, slightly less furious than last week, got paid today as well though, so all good, I'm in a good mood.
That's why he looks a bit happier than he did at the end of last week's show, but Nathan, thanks for coming back again.
Thank you.
And to his right, he's been known as Veronica's least favourite child, he's been known as the set piece king, he's been known as the jobby jobber, but from today, and only today, he will be forever known as the ESSR champion. It's last week's quiz winner, Ross McLeod.
Yes, and we found out later on that I got an extra point, and so did you, Stevie, because Dave was a bit pedantic with his answers. Turns out it was New York.
Yes, the backlash from last week's quiz is coming to the fore.
Your time will come.
And to Ross's right, he is known simply as the Scottish Big Dog. I don't do it quite the same as other people. It's Alan McLucas.
All right, what's happening?
How's it going, Alan?
I'm good, mate, you?
Yes, very good, very good. Glad to be back in the hosting chair this week. And finally on our panel, so maybe a surprise at this point that he's here, because I've mentioned him about 20 times.
Surprise he's not walked out, man.
It's the king of kayfabe, the modern day butcher rager. Hailing from New York City, it's David Hockney.
I'm getting a lot of heat right now. This is uncalled for right here.
It's technically not New York, Stevie, it's Uniondale, New York.
Say, what's with all the backstage heat going on here? I mean, I tried to be a fair, impartial quiz master last week. So, what's going on?
Fair and impartial, but a bit pedantic, as it said.
Well, that's just me. I am pedantic, so that's just, yeah, that's just me. Deal with it.
In all seriousness, guys, good to have you back on the show again this week.
Yeah, good to be back. Yep.
Yes, this is Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet. If you're listening for the first time, what's took you so long? We are on Facebook and Twitter, as well as Instagram if you take pictures of wrestling. That's Suplex Retweet. Again, join in the debate. We are on until 7 p.m. So, tonight we will be discussing best comebacks in wrestling. Yes, we're taking a pit stop on our road to WrestleMania to discuss some great comebacks, as it is Easter, and it's the time of comebacks. Apparently.
Christianity reference. Love it.
What a comeback, though, to be fair.
Stephen Louch is listening somewhere in Larbert and thinking, yes, that's my idea. I'm claiming it. Yes, so comebacks. Guy, for those of you who are maybe a bit fresh to wrestling, you maybe don't have an emphasis on what the comeback means to wrestling. That's what we're going to start off today's show with. We're also going to go through the panel and the guys will discuss their opinions on comebacks. So, Guy, the comeback, major tool in wrestling. It's a point where we get guys who have been injured, away for a time, going to TNA, WCW, all these type of things in wrestling history. The comeback is big. It's the time where they get out there and the fans see them for the first time in potentially a long time. Usually it pops. Sometimes we get a Summer Rae reaction.
Or an Eva Marie reaction.
But Eva Marie got that generally, so.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm going to start off today's going by just going around his own thing. How good a tool is the comebacks and just the theatre that is sports entertainment? Let's go around, so let's get the discussion on this one.
I think the Raw after Mania sort of comeback, as expected, but at the same time, because it's a hardcore group of fans, it's still, you still get a big pop, but I think it's more effective if it's someone who's been away for a good while, like, mm-hmm. you know, Ziggler being away for 6 weeks and then returning for a minute and 30 seconds in the Rumble. Mm-hmm. It's an example of a very bad comeback, you know, it needs to be used to propel someone. Mm-hmm. Use the reaction they get, don't just let it die out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, the comeback, you know, it's quite, it can be probably the most pivotal point in a person's career. You know, they could be sort of somewhere in the mid card, for example, they get written off, say, with injury or whatever, and if they come back months down the line, and say if they're a fan favourite, or even just like a really big heel, they could get propelled straight into the main event scene if they wanted, or they become a very sort of notable star. So it definitely is, it's not just a comeback, it's pretty much a career rejuvenation, as mm-hmm. it were.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a case of absence makes the heart grow fonder, especially through examples, which I'm sure we'll discuss today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the type of thing, as Ross has brought up, on the Raw and SmackDown after WrestleManias have brought forward that idea. While I'm talking here, I quickly realised I've done a Dave and forgot about our EP to my right here.
It's the curse of being the host of the show, that's what it is.
Yes, Quacko's here.
Hey!
That is an example of how the pop should not go.
Next week I want pyro, I want smoke for my entrance thing.
Well, what is happening next week actually?
Next update.
We're off topic. I've already went off topic slightly because I did a botch on a Dave, I'm now going to call it.
So basically they're just going to call it Dave-a-mania now?
No, you're not at that stage. Not bot. So yeah, the comeback is a great tool. You find it's been something we've seen in wrestling for so long, but it's these things now. WrestleMania is seen as comebacks. You get it at the pay-per-views, Raw, SmackDown after Mania. It's emphasised them so much because we kind of we're leading up to it. You kind of think, is he going to come back? Is he going to come back? Past times you maybe didn't get that, but there's been so many throughout history. And for the next hour and a half or so, we're going to try and go through some of these great comebacks. Guys, have you? I assume you've got a list as long as anything here. This is the list of Jericho.
I was going to say, yeah, we've got a list of Jericho-length list here. So it's, but yeah, plenty to go through.
Spoiler alert for the rest of the podcast. He may be mentioned a few times. Yeah, so we're going to go round here. I'm going to stop trying to crack jokes and get on with talking. Nathan, kick us off here tonight. Some of your best comebacks, or your first of your best comebacks.
First of all, I'll do my best first. Certainly my favourite moments last year, I'm just going to get straight into it, was the Hardy's return at WrestleMania last year. I was at, when I watched WrestleMania last year, I was at the committee rooms in Glasgow, here in Glasgow. Our own Andy Mitchell. We covered that last week, but our own Andy Mitchell has a video of us all going absolutely mental when Hardy's came out. I mean, the roof almost came off the place. Mm-hmm. And it's one of my favourites just because, well, it's a mix of nostalgia for us that, I mean, I'm so glad they used their old music. I mean, just that instant hit, like the music coming on, set the scene. And, like, going back to the video that Andy did when WrestleMania was, well, WrestleMania last year, I was doing my final year uni exams. Obviously a very stressful time, especially when you go to an esteemed institution as the University of Glasgow. And then...
And then
I remember watching that video over and over, and you know, it just made me smile because it's what wrestling's all about, you know, like moments like that. Just bring it all back, like the nostalgia, you know. I was happy for them to be back in WWE as well, because I was a big fan of them being there first there and they're actually there run, so...
Yeah,
many things, but I love it.
It was a really good one. I mean, just to give a bit of clarity for anybody who didn't watch WrestleMania last year and maybe didn't know what happened. Again, I don't know why you would know what's happened. It was everywhere online. But Hardy's had been away for, Jeff had been away for about, what was it, about 8 years or something?
Yeah,
away
8 years, yeah.
Matt, maybe about 5 or 6.
Yeah.
But it's one of the ones that's been talked about for a while because we all kind of seen that they were away from TNA. And I think it's fair to say that going into that, towards the end of 2016, the Hardys were probably as hot as they'd been for many years. I think that's fair to say.
I think it was the fact that Matt eventually got over the popularity of Brother Jeff, and the fact that...
Or Brother Nero.
Brother Common Nero, as they need to call them now. But it's, at the same time, they were in Ring of Honor the night before, so there was still that lingering of doubt, will they stay in Ring of Honor? Because they were still having great matches with the Bucks of Youth and, you know, the Brothers of Briscoe, and, you know, they were tearing the house down every night there, so it was a surprise, but not a surprise at the same time.
Yeah, it was kind of. I think to me personally, kind of added to it was the fact they were at the Ring of Honor show. Was it the night before?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They'd fought that ladder match with the Bucks of Young Bucks, of course. Stellar match the other night at U Japan, by the way, but that's for a different type of conversation.
Oh, yeah, super.
But it was a brutal ladder match, I think it's fair to say. And to then come out the next night and be at WrestleMania. To
do another ladder match as well.
I think it was a slightly less physical ladder match, I think it's fair to say, because there was so many teams. I mean, them and the Bucks tore the house down at the Ring of Honor the night before. Dave, you should probably watch that. There is other wrestling going on in the world.
I will.
No, I've heard good things about that ladder match. It's.
I have to slay off a Dave as well. I didn't watch that match either, so I was kind of.
I really liked about that comeback, though? They weren't even at the arena when the show started.
Yeah.
Like, they were driven from their hotel to the arena, maybe about. About an hour into it.
It was during the show. They showed up during the show. It wasn't like. It was quite smart in WWE because they know if they'd arrived before it.
If they arrived with everybody else, then they would think, they're going to be on the show.
I quite like the fact that the New Day came out in full gear. Mm-hmm. Ready to go, and it's like, the New Day. The New Day are going to come out. It's like, they've hosted it. It's expected, you know, they're the only real team who could be in this one from the Raw roster at that point in time. And then the Hardys came out, and it was just like, wow.
And they actually started Kofi and that, or started walking just at least a couple of steps down the ramp, and then that's when the music hit. That was the best shock factor moment of it.
I think it was also like Super Bowl was a ladder match, one of their signature match types, which they were famous for, obviously.
It's like you can't have a good ladder match without the Hardys, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, it's a staple match of theirs, man. It would even better if the Dudleys came out after it, but that's a bit too much nostalgia for one night. Moving slightly on from what the WrestleMania did, how did you think they feel their tag team comeback went? Did you think it kind of, that was obviously the peak of it? Did you think it kind of tailed away?
That was always going to be the peak of it because it's the biggest arena, it's the biggest shock, you know. But their series with Sheamus and Cesaro up to, I think, Great Balls of Fire was amazing. Obviously, it got a bit delayed with Jeff getting injured and Matt kind of floundered till they got the license for the Broken gimmick. But I don't think you can say it's not a success. Like, it's not Dudley levels bad. That was just tragic. They were losing on Superstars to Zack Ryder and Dolph Ziggler. They're not even a team and they beat the Dudleys.
Sheamus and Cesaro are the stellar 2017, I think. Yeah. And that rivalry with the Hardys helped put them over a bit extra than them.
Over!
For Christ's sake.
I'd call it a good comeback because, you know, like Ross mentioned, you know, the feud with the Bar was probably a good way to sort of come back out swinging. I think there was a lot of untapped potential because obviously there was still the Broken gimmick rights were still up in the air, and I think everybody was just waiting for the moment where the Broken Universe would come into effect. But unfortunately, that's when Jeff's injury kind of derailed it a bit. But I think he was seen in Raw this week, so he's backstage. So I hope the Broken Universe comes pretty quickly.
It was a good mix of Broken gimmick references and obviously old school Hardys, which pulled everybody in, I think. And I think to many people, it's one of the best comebacks in recent history, and it's only fitting that's how we kick off our best comeback show. So I thanks Nathan for that one. Ross, or should I say champ?
I will be referred to as Sir from now on.
Ross, what's your first best comeback?
Well, I'm sitting next to Alan just now, and we're hugging tightly because we have the same one. It's the greatest wrestler of all time. It's my Dwayne, my Rock, my Johnson.
He's ours,
yes. His comeback in 2011 to host WrestleMania 27, you know, people have mixed reviews of how The Rock after the comeback was, but they done everything to hide that review. As I see Alan deleting The Rock's comeback for his list, and I've just stole it. You've got about 40. I had three.
Let's be honest, it wouldn't be a show without Ross mentioning The Rock.
Yes.
And he got in there first.
Oh, damn right.
It's going to be a recurring theme for many months when Ross and Alan are both on the show. Who's going to talk about Rock first?
Next week, if Alan's on, he'll just yell, Rock! Just to start the show. No, but The Rock's return, it was the speculation was there, and then Rock teased it with a wee photo on his Twitter or his Instagram at the time. And then they had the moment the limo pulls in, and there was rumours of Stephen McMahon to dampen people's sort of expectations. And then you see the woman coming at the limo, and then the entire arena went dark, and you thought, maybe it's Jericho, and then that music just hit, and everybody just went absolutely... I jumped off my couch. I never heard it's cooking. I jump off my couch. I was
shivers thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly. I was 17 at the time, so my voice was still about... sort of. And that was a big, girly pop, and it was one of my favourite things ever. Just gushing at it here.
I think the best thing about that Rock return was, as you said, it was so unexpected. Mm. He was really hitting his peak as a Hollywood megastar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like, he'd appeared a few times in the past, years before that, just as VTs type thing, you know, on the screen. There was a Prince Appreciation Night, he did a wee thing as well. But it was kind of like he's not going to come back, he's not going to see him full time in the ring again. Well, full time to an extent.
Yeah, because he turned down WrestleMania 21 match. He turned down appearing at WrestleMania 24 after being in the Hall of Fame. He turned down being on Raw to say goodbye to Ric Flair. Mm-hmm. He was backstage, but he wasn't. He chose not to go on screen because he felt it would hamper it. And then I remember nearly greeting, because that December before he gave an interview and he basically just said, "It's over for me. I loved my time wrestling. I'll always be The Rock, but." I'm an actor now. Mm-hmm. And then not 2 months later the music hits and he just comes out ripped to shreds, bald head, glasses on, and he just it was, say what you want about some of his promos from when he's came back, that was a classic 1999 to 2001 Rock promo.
Yeah, totally. Alan, do you agree with what Ross says in that type of thing as a fellow Rock appreciation?
I'm getting the shivers in the back of my mind just thinking about it. I like Ross. Screamed like a little girl when he returned, woke up the whole house. I'm pretty sure my dad thought we were being burgled, but I didn't care because the great one was home.
Ding!
Love it.
I'm annoyed he got to go first, but all that, you know, I agree. For me, it's the greatest.
I mean, to non-Rock lovers, such as used to. Rock's return was kind of tainted by 2013. To me, anyway, the fact they fought Cena again, I didn't like that whole idea, you know.
No,
But as a general moment, I mean, the pop. I mean, we've talked in the past how important a pop is. I mean, we talked about it in the Austin podcast, how big that pop was when he came out with Mankind winning the title. And the pop that night was great, just like, it's The Rock. It's unreal, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rock's a type of guy. He's made a few comebacks, a couple of comebacks. I mean, I don't know. Do you have any other Rock comebacks on your list before I cut you off? I do. I won't talk about them in Philly then, but he's made a few comebacks. But because that one was so shocking, I think that was the one that kind of drew people in, you know?
Yeah.
He made a sort of brief appearance in 2004, because after he left in Backlash 03 when he lost to Goldberg, he was off away filming, what was it, The Scorpion King?
No, Scorpion King was his first.
Right.
I think it was like the rundown and
whatnot. Yeah.
And but yeah, he came back in like 2004 to do a SummerSlam segment, or was that?
He fought at WrestleMania 20. One of the most underrated matches, I think, in WrestleMania history was when he teamed with Mick Foley for the Rock and Sock Connection against Evolution.
That's a WWE style match. It was over the top. It was funny. It was legends mixed in with up and comers like Batista and Randy Orton, and I think, as much as I hated it in 2004, it was like, it was the best thing for Evolution to win.
Yeah.
Because Batista and Randy Orton then had that in their CV. We beat The Rock and Mick Foley at WrestleMania.
I mean, I kind of like that idea. I mean, you just kind of talked about it when David hosted the best and worst WrestleMania shows, that having part-timers on the shows. That was one of the really early matches on the card, so they didn't really steal the spotlight away from the likes of the guys in the main event.
The
top-tier stars. They knew the way they were doing, and they put over the stars at that point in time Batista and Randy Orton. But The Rock, it was a great staple on that one.
It was like third match of the night as well, so it was actually pretty early on.
Was it third? I thought it was about fourth or fifth.
It was somewhere in the middle, because I remember the US title was first, then it was Jericho and Christian. I think after that it was...
Tag titles, that was it.
Sorry, that's the one I'm forgetting.
There was two Fatal 4-Way tag titles. I don't think MD would pod it against you for forgetting either one of them. They were so forgettable.
Rikishi and Scotty Too Hotty won one of those matches.
Yeah.
I was dying. Scotty Too Hotty, he's got a win at WrestleMania. A good Scott, unlike my Scott, the Bart Gunn of the McLean. Hi, Scott.
It's good. Scotty Too Hotty had a rough run in Royal Rumbles. I remember watching them back.
So he'll get taken out about 3 years in a row. He's got Curtis Axel beat for that longest run.
No, he got done in by was it Undertaker? Oh, and that was, Kane oh, one that year.
And then Muhammad Hassan the following year. I think Hassan got eliminated. Scotty came out and Hassan just attacked him.
Yeah, after Hassan got eliminated by everybody.
Yeah, literally everybody.
Anyone get more thoughts on The Rock 2011 return?
Well,
I don't think we'll get a long enough.
Part. I think, I could throw my two cents in. I think WrestleMania 27, you know, it was looking pretty weak already, so it needed a big electrifying boost of energy, and, you know, getting The Rock to host it, I think that was what sold the tickets for WrestleMania that year.
Definitely a business boost. Certainly, I hated Cena at the time, so although I kind of soured towards his return towards, like, 2013, when he first came back and he started slagging Cena, I was like, good man.
But yeah, and then the next night where they set up the WrestleMania 28 match, I think that sort of made you sort of watch the whole year as it unfolded.
Yeah, no.
But I think obviously the downside of that is because you plan so far in advance, you don't take into account things like injuries, who could be the champion at the time, and then of course that's when CM Punk and the pipe bomb sort of changed everything. But well, it didn't really, because Cena Rock still main evented and CM Punk went on second to last, which is a bit of a shame really.
Before we move on, best moment of WrestleMania 27, Rocky Mae Young interaction. Yes. Priceless. Amazing. But
one London. Last thing. So we were talking about, obviously, WrestleMania 27 doing that poor. Austin and Rock have minuscule roles in that WrestleMania. One's a guest ref, one's the host, and they're both on the poster, and they're both prominently featured.
It's a good moment with A2 as well, actually.
Yeah. That was a highlight.
Before Mae came in.
Old school confrontation backstage.
Excellent. But thanks for Ross. And thanks for bringing Rock into our lives again.
You're welcome.
Evolution, Rock and Sock Connection, match four of the night, that night, WrestleMania 20, by the way. So, David, you were close. I'll give you it. However, it's not the right. So, you're wrong. You don't get any points. Alan, what's your one? I know you've been trumped by Ross on the Rock moment, but what have you got for us?
I do have another Rock moment. The opening for WrestleMania 30.
Right.
With Austin and Hogan.
Because
I was in my pal Scott's house. I hope he's listening. And we were kind of joking, but Hogan comes out, and then Austin comes out, Stunner Slam, then The Rock comes out and lays him out, and it started happening, other than the actual fighting bit. But and to kind of quote JR, that's three of the top four of all time, and I agree with that. I think the only person that's missing is Ric Flair, and that's your Mount Rushmore of wrestling.
They are the four that are most well quoted on the Mount Rushmore of wrestling. Some people throw Undertaker in and about there, but
I'd throw Undertaker in.
I think because you kind of got what you kind of got. Parts of the era coming out there. You had Hogan, obviously, in the 80s boom, who revolutionised wrestling. You had Austin, who was the Attitude Era poster boy, absolutely saved WWE many people's eyes from going bust with the Attitude Era. And you got The Rock, who kind of, for a wee bit, he was in Austin's shadow. Not Austin's shadow, per se. He was kind of, if he'd put him in any different era, well, The Rock did completely.
It was like the flip side of the coin, as it were.
Yeah. But when Austin was injured, Rock stepped up and he became... You kind of forgot Austin was away for a point in time because Rock was that popular.
That was something I seen online about. They said the Attitude Era was like having two Hogans, and the fact that they had Rock just under Austin, it's something they should have now, for the simple fact that when that big star got injured for so long, they had a ready-made replacement. Like, he got injured and Undertaker got injured, so they were the top heel and face. So Triple H and Rock were ready to step up, and they were like... They basically took 2000 and made it their own.
Yeah, you just don't see that anymore. It's a shame.
No. But that kind of moment Alan's talking about at the start of WrestleMania 30, obviously, you, Hogan, was going to be there.
He was hosting, yeah.
He hosted, he did a Dave, we thought, great.
Was that, are you talking about his Silverdome?
Yeah, so he didn't get a good botch of Mania.
Silverdome, brother.
he corrected himself, though, at least.
I really hope he makes an appearance.
Because I remember
Weekend Sunday does the same thing.
Yeah, I remember we watched that WrestleMania in my house. There was like myself and a bunch of others on the podcast. Were you there, Kwaku?
I was.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, yeah. So
because Pizzagate.
Yeah, me, Josh, Stacey, we all watched it. Mine, and basically when The Rock came out, everybody just jumped.
You keep forgetting me when you're talking. Oh yeah, I was there as well. I was the first there.
Oh, of course you were. Yeah. But yeah, so I remember when we were all sitting on the couch and we literally just... It wasn't just Austin, you know, that we popped at, you know, I mean, Rock came out as well. We thought everybody just went off their nut. So yeah, it was a really good moment.
I was quite glad we actually got to see that moment because you had a very big issue getting it on the TV. I remember rightly, your laptop kept going into screensaver mode.
Yeah, it was. That was just a couple of tech issues, but...
Once I got it working, it was fine. But I kind of like that Alan's brought that up. It's not one of the ones I kind of thought of as a return, you know, as for say, because obviously it's one of the ones you kind of feel like it's just part of the moment, you know, but obviously we hadn't seen Rock for, it was a year. Austin hadn't been about for so long as well, you know.
I think the Rock one, he'd get injured less than 5 minutes into the Cena match.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was a case of, he never showed up the next night in Raw, so fans kind of soured on him, thinking he'd walked out in the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it came out like a couple of months later, like, no, I had to go get surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And he hadn't made any appearances, hadn't been referenced at all. He hadn't been announced for WrestleMania 30, which was
weird.
Didn't
one of the fast forms get pushed back because of it?
Yeah, no, it was Pain and Gain.
Pain and Gain.
Pain and Gain and Hercules. He never done any press for Pain and Gain, and Hercules get delayed.
Hmm.
I know that certainly stopped them coming back. Like, film studios and stuff are a bit reluctant to let him go.
That's why he's not going to be in the tag match with Ronda, because he was the one they wanted, obviously.
It would have made sense. Yeah.
Mania 31, instead of the one man thumb, cut the angle. But no, we've got Rock fans and Austin fans. I think that's just a perfect moment.
Yeah.
And obviously the beer.
They all shared a beer at the end. That was like, you know, it's a combination of 30 years of WrestleMania all coming together as one, like each representing a different decade.
I think it was a perfect moment
for
that WrestleMania, because it was WrestleMania 30.
Definitely, yeah, it was a milestone moment.
I'm so happy that's been brought up. Again, it wasn't on my list, but I'm very happy Alan's brought that up.
Yeah.
I hope that makes up for your loss of not doing the first Rock moment.
There's always next week.
Try it.
Right, Dave. Right, Dave.
Yes.
What have you got in store for us here? What's your first one?
Well, sticking with the trend of WrestleMania, one I've got is from 2004, WrestleMania 20. It's featuring the return of the Deadman Undertaker, where he converted from the 2003 Survivor Series, where he went from American Badass, got buried alive, and then came back as Deadman Undertaker. Like, he was going for a feud with Kane, and the promos started like straight from the Royal Rumble, where lights go out, the bell sounds, and there's just a lot of creepy stuff happens on Raw. He didn't make any sort of like appearance in person, but the only time he came out was at Mania itself. And even on this was mentioned before on Best and Worst Mania shows, it was the promo for it. It was just like a picture of a cross and shadows, and Kane was on the other side. So then when Undertaker comes out with his hat and his big coat on, and all the druids carrying torches, and with Paul Bearer holding the urn, it was like the Deadman had been fully resurrected to his prime, and he's been that way for the past 13 years now.
Yeah, no, spot on, David. You did do a wee botch in there. It was actually on the Streak episode we mentioned that, but you were close enough. You did think that was going to be that week anyway, so it's a bit understandable you got that mix up.
Yeah, but yeah, no, it's I stand by that as like one of the best Undertaker entrances ever.
It was amazing, brilliant.
But yeah, having the druids in the fire as well, it was reminiscent of I think it was Mania 14 or 13 where he came
14,
out.
Yeah. 14, yeah.
14, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'll go to Nathan on this one. Nathan, you weren't obviously on the Streak episode, so the rest of you were, so we kind of talked about in detail there. What was your thoughts on Undertaker's return at WrestleMania 20 to face Kane, as they've described?
I liked it because, although he was like referred to as a dead man, it was kind of a hybrid between his American Badass and his previous dead man gimmick, which I kind of liked. I also liked, I think it's this one where it looks like he's levitating.
Yeah, that was the year after.
Was that a year after?
Against
Orton, right?
Yeah. He was just on this little platform and he was just floating out.
I thought it was either one or two. But, oh, it was good. Really good. It was done for Paul Bearer as well, I'm sure.
The Paul Bearer return was brilliant as well. You thought Undertaker was going to be there, obviously, but then it was Paul Bearer. It was like, oh god, it's brilliant. It was JR's reaction as well to that.
Yeah,
that's Paul Bearer.
Yeah, King's reaction as well. His voice goes all high pitched. It's like, my god, JR, it's him, he's here.
JR and King are always good for returns.
Yeah,
because JR goes off his nut and then it's just a scream I love King's scream. There's one that just what popped in my mind there, it's a fatal four-way and Rey Mysterio comes out of nowhere, takes somebody out, and you just hear King just go, ah!
No, it's great. I mean, we could probably do a show in itself on Undertaker returns, because he has made that many.
Well, I think, like, what Dave was saying about how it was the full Deadman resurrected, because we got kind of used to he comes in at WrestleMania, he goes away, he comes back at SummerSlam. That was sort of the last 5 years before he went just WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
But like Dave was saying, we hadn't seen him for so long, and that was the full Deadman.
Yeah, because he'd obviously been in the
American Badass.
Yeah, well, that was the one I'd grew up with. I'd never seen.
That was gimmick transition right there, because, you know, some of the other comebacks in sort of later years, where he came back at, like, Unforgiven 07 against Mark Henry, or, say, or like Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, he was still the dead man going in and coming out. Mm-hmm. Whereas this, you know, it was, like, full... it was going back to his roots in a way. Like, he was in the American Badass for a few years, but then he basically flips all that round and he goes back to what he knows. He goes back to being spooky, right dead Fred sort of kind of guy.
I think it was needed at that time for The Undertaker, because I think that the American Badass was kind of getting stale at that point in time. 2003 wasn't a stellar year in the history of The Undertaker. I think it's fair to say, I mean, come on, he nearly had to team with Nathan Jones at WrestleMania.
Probably, and he had that biker chain match as well against Lesnar.
Probably the least popular gimmick, American Badass, I'd say.
He was always hit and miss. And look at, we were talking about it the other day, 2002, he had so many good matches and so many bad. He had a bad run of matches with The Undertaker, then he had a classic match with Jeff Hardy.
Undertaker and Undertaker.
Oh, yes, yes. Fake Undertaker came back for revenge. That's not... There's me boxing.
Good save, I like it. Good save, though, I like it.
No, but he had a bad season match. You know, if you said this in 98, 99, that Undertaker had bad matches with Stone Cold that were mid-card that no one cared about. Mm-hmm. You know, but he had bad matches with Stone Cold. Then he had a great match at WrestleMania with Ric Flair. Then he had the classic match with Jeff. A horrible match with Triple H. Then a good match with Kurt and Rock at Vengeance.
It's one of the best triple threat matches of all time.
Yeah.
That and probably Benoit, Michaels and Triple H.
And it was like sort of up and down, because he went Triple H, awful, then the Rock Kurt angle, great, and then it was sort of, I think it was Test at SummerSlam 2002.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he was faced and he was fighting for America.
then he fought Brock.
Then he fought Brock at...
The Hell in a Cell with Brock that year.
That was brutal. That
was Hell in a Cell match. Was great, but like they were saying, the biker chain match, Jesus Christ.
It was like Vince Russo was back.
Yeah, it was, we've got Undertaker, tune in, it might be good.
And then there was Buried Alive with... He's Buried Alive match with Vince.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't exactly a classic, you know, but it was done for a reason, obviously, to lead to this comeback. And I think the whole spectacle of it, I like the fact we talked about the kind of placement of the card at WrestleMania 20. This was this one that went second last.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like, it was building to that as well. Like Undertaker's going to come. Undertaker's coming back.
It's only about 6 or 7 minutes to the
match. Oh, it's
not a long match. No.
The match itself is very forgettable. Especially when you compare it to the match at WrestleMania 14.
Well, what I liked about it was sort of like Brock against Goldberg this year. It wasn't flashy. It wasn't 30 minutes. It wasn't, you know, time limit draws and people getting exhausted. It was a case of, these are what these guys can do. We'll give you 5 minutes of the best they can do.
5 minutes full pelt, that's what it gave you,
You'd rather that than just, we can get into this on our time, Triple H, Jesus Christ.
I think it was fitting because Kane had been on like 6 months worth of destruction, you know, going through the Raw roster in various despicable manners, I think it's fair to say. And I think Undertaker was a fitting guy to kind of put him in his place.
He popped Shane McMahon's testicles. And yet Shane McMahon went on to have 3 children.
Oh, we mentioned this in one other show. I can't remember exactly. The Best of Raw show we mentioned. I went through a bunch of things that he actually done. That time scale, it was like, okay, jeez.
Shane McMahon has had 3 children with no testicles. That is a medical marvel. He'll be at WrestleMania with diverticulitis.
That would be a miracle.
He'll show up with his drip coming out of the hospital.
Drip and 2 big black circles under his eyes.
But yeah, I love it. It's a great return. And I think we may get some more Undertaker ones as the show goes on. We may not. But that's a very fitting one to come up with, Dave. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Made up for your botches last week with that return. Right, now we're on to myself here. And I think we're going to go away from WWE for this one. And I think we're going to go to one that occurred in 2014 in our own backyard. Yes, we're talking about the return of Drew Galloway to Scottish independent wrestling. We're talking about his return at the first Shug's House Party at ICW. My first ICW show. Wow. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much for anybody who's not a fan of ICW and listens to the show, obviously it's a Glasgow wrestling promotion, of course, and they ran their first show, first Shug's House Party in the ABC, and the night finished off with Drew Galloway, who was an original ICW. Was on the first show ever in Maryhill. He returned at the end of the show, massive pop, crowd went mental, and said he was going to put ICW on the map. And I think he has put them on the map now, but guys, Dave's been to ICW once, so he's included in this conversation.
I've been to a few shows, thank you. Yeah.
Alan, are you an ICW fan?
I'm an ICW fan. Don't get the chance to watch the shows, but I always keep up to date with him.
I was there for his first match after Shugs. You know, it was Spaceballs in the garage.
Yes, against James Scott.
James Scott, yes.
We fat Taz.
I wonder if when he's last messaged the show, and I wonder who read out his comments.
Don't start. But yeah, no, I heard about Drew's comeback in ICW with... at Shugs that year, and I remember, I think it was a Best in the World. Chris Murray was saying to me, "Look, you should come to this ICW show. It'll be your first one. Drew Galloway's going to be wrestling his first match back, and you won't be disappointed." Mm-hmm. And you know, as an added bonus, I got to see Noam Dar for the first time as well, so that was pretty cool. But yeah,
I think the first in the series with Joe Coffey. I think that night was.
But yeah, Drew is definitely the epitome of ICW. Like, yeah. His Hall of Fame induction earlier this year, basically, I don't think there's anybody else who could have got it. But he did exactly what he said he would do. He put ICW on the map.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, Ross, Nathan, what's your thoughts on this one? And Alan, obviously, of course.
I think it was not just a couple of weeks after he got released, or three weeks, something like that. So it was really soon after he got released by WWE.
It was
anyway.
Very, very soon. Yeah. Mark Dallas has said a good few times in interviews that he was the only guy who didn't contact Drew. I mean, apparently Drew was getting contacted by everybody.
Yeah, Drew went to Dallas.
He went to Dallas. Yeah, he went original either, yeah. So it was very secretive. We saw it in the second Fight Club documentary, how much a secret they had to keep Drew from being seen. You know, he had to get blooming deliveries into his house. Yeah. People had to bring in rolls and juice into him and that type of things, you know. And his dad's house, you know. Just random. I mean, his dad didn't even know he was going to behave. He's like, "Hi, Dad."
That must have been terrifying for his poor dad. Jesus, Drew's like 6'7". This thing with dyed black hair standing in front of you. Hello.
What happened to your accent, son?
I love his American Scottish accent.
It's a weird Scottish Brooklyn accent, no.
He's Gerard Butler accent. It reminds me.
That's who it is, Gerard Butler. That's who he reminds me of.
Yeah, I want a roll and sausage, but it's heavy hoaching with grease, man.
Was it Stephen Louts that says he can't say, it doesn't, he can't say, is it sausage he can't say?
Aye.
Was it, calls it again?
Something meat.
No, it was Renfrew on one of his show. He calls it a meat patty. Aye, because they were talking about it at a show with Colt Cabana. Because Colt, they hadn't seen the funny side, but they were trying to get Colt on the radio show. And Dallas and Renfrew were drunk, and they were just, they spent their 20 minutes with Colt Cabana talking about, why do you think Drew Galloway calls it a meat patty? Just poor Colt had no clue what they were talking about.
But no, I think it was good because obviously it was, ICW at that point had guys from the US come back, like the likes of Rhino, for say, they'd come in and had great matches, but I think it was purely because Drew had just been released, as Nathan said. It was that shock factor that he hadn't been anywhere. I mean, he could have went anywhere first, but he chose to come back home, and it was just that was a great night of wrestling, I thought, my first show was at ICW, and obviously I'm still going to shows today, so I was obviously hooked on something, you know.
I actually only seen the clip because you text me at 2 in the morning.
Did I?
You text me at 2 in the morning, did you see Drew's back? And I'm like, was there a pay-per-view? Like, thinking WWE, like, there was a pay-per-view. I'm like, I didn't even know he was gone. And then I went on, it was my brother later on the day, went, yeah, he's back, there's a clip on YouTube. And it was, even just watching it on YouTube, it's definitely, I can only imagine what it was like being there.
Oh, it was absolutely brilliant. Was anybody else there?
I wasn't, though.
No.
Not me.
This was pre your fandom, wasn't it? What this show, yeah. I mean, what do you think Nick Kwaku, Drew Return helped to do to ICW?
Well, obviously quite a lot. It's something that he was saying in his Hall of Fame speech was everybody was phoning to say, I want to get an ICW, I want to get an ICW. And he said, it's now got to the stage where they're saying, no, you don't have to be booked, we book you if you're worthy of it. And
yeah,
that's such a great position to be in, that everybody wants to be on ICW, and just look at the way he shot up the PWI, the Pro Wrestler Insider, or whatever it's called, rankings.
And top 10, wasn't he? No.
Yep, he got, and that's the highest position he'd ever been at, and that was purely by touring around and also working ICW. So,
I like the fact that he stayed at, like, not just for one comeback and then maybe like a 3-month program. It was nearly 3 years.
2 years, I think it was.
Two and a bit years, yeah.
Yeah, he died because he showed back up at WrestleMania weekend this
last year. Mm.
Yeah, and it was the fact that no matter where he was always at the majority of the Fight Club tapings. He was always, you know, on the big specials, whether it be Newcastle, Liverpool, Glasgow, Edinburgh. You know, he was all over the show.
There was one where they all got stuck in traffic and he was the only one there. Him and he was one of my guys. They had to hold up the show himself for a good bit. I can't remember. One of the ones down south.
The bus broke down or something like that. They had all the ring gear with them.
Aye, and he was just there. He got a flight directly in from America and he was holding the show up by himself. True pro. I mean, his NXT return last year, as you say, well, that was quite shocking as well because nobody expected him to be there.
My favourite moment of that was the fact that the guys that run WCPW didn't even know about he was going to WWE. So they poor guys still had their title on him. He did a show for WCPW in Florida that day at 1 p.m. and then he showed up in the front row of NXT. The guys were there and just kind of looked and went, oh crap.
and that's the thing about when they get sort of people coming to NXT, like, they don't just show up in the ring, you know. The unique selling point for them is they just have them sit in the front row. Like, they did the same with Bobby Roode with the War Machine. I think that's quite a unique way of doing it. And, you know, Drew was well known to the WWE fans anyway because of his initial title run as the Chosen One, and then who could forget his time with 3MB. And, yeah, but that on its own is a good comeback as well when he arrived on NXT as well. Like, and he won the title from Bobby Roode.
I think what you were saying as well, sorry, but we're talking about comebacks. I think a trope that's overused is someone that just charges the ring and takes somebody out, or someone that just appears on the entrance ramp. Like, I think that, like, what you're saying, NXT, they just appear in the crowd, which made Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, no, we're just talking about debuts here, but that made that so much more impactful, the fact that Drew's return took place outside War Machine, Ricochet, you know, EC3, they were all just like, aye, we're here, we'll be here when we feel like it. You know, Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish just...
It worked better with Drew because his was more like a comeback rather than a debut, whereas Undisputed Era, you know, that was their first appearance, so why not make an impact? It made more sense for them to be booked like that, but with Drew, I felt him sitting in the front row of the crowd, that made more sense.
Such a smarky look on his face as well, wasn't it? It was so good.
If you want to know more maybe about 3MB, then there's a very good podcast on Anchor and iTunes. Yes, it's us. Yes, we did an episode on 3MB and you can listen to it as well as all the historic episodes on iTunes and Anchor at Suplex Retweet. Right, that has been the first half of our greatest comebacks. Stay tuned to us for the second half where we'll be going through more of our best comebacks. We'll be talking a bit more about what our listeners have said, what their best comebacks are, and also we'll be going into a bit more detail of what we're going to be doing next week. Yes, we're doing a lot and it's going to be mega. But before that, we are going to continue our streak of playing great promos in WrestleMania history. This is our latest one. Try and guess what it is. We'll be back in a moment.
Part about all of this.
Two icons in their prime.
Me, John, and the fans.
It's once in a lifetime.
WrestleMania is like no other night.
We say it and it becomes cliched, but it's showcase of the immortals. Memories are made.
It's taken on a whole life of its own. It's become mythical even before it happens.
Is the grandest stage of them all.
Rock versus Cena, WrestleMania, once in a lifetime. Epic.
Biggest stars in this industry.
They have a desire to be the best.
They need success like they need air.
A desire to be in the spotlight.
And they will both put everything they have into getting that air.
Tonight, we are young. So set the world on fire. We can burn brighter. to win more.
John Cena needs to win this match to validate that he is who he says he is.
Rock has to prove to the entire world that he still has what it takes. These are two guys that are going to go out there and paint the ultimate masterpiece.
I think it's going to be one of the best matches that we've ever seen because it's destined to be that.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're coming live from Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat on Strathclyde Fusion!
Welcome back to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. I'm Stephen Wilson, and I am joined by Nathan Fisher, David Hockney, Alan McLucas, and Ross McLeod.
Who's still taking his seat?
I was getting a biscuit.
You could have been subtle. We could have. Nobody did have to know that, but you had to point that out because you're jealous at his champ.
Yeah. I want my rematch.
Yes, that. For those of you listening, that promo there, that was the one from John Cena and Rock. Once in a lifetime.
Part one.
Thanks as well to Fun We Are Young, who provided the music for that promo. I think that was that got that song big as well, that being in that promo.
Yeah, what was it? Fun We Are Young, was released that year, and then, yeah, it was like song of the summer, essentially.
Yeah, one it's of them.
Well, that and The Wanted, Glad You Came, I think, came out that year.
I can't believe you referenced The Wanted on this show.
Yeah. I'm going to defend Dave here. I think that's an absolute tune.
It was an absolute tune, yeah.
And I'm glad I came to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet while we're talking about Best Comeback. See?
Yes,
awesome segue.
For anybody who's listening for the first time, we are on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram at Suplex Retweet. Right, before we move on to the discussion, I think it's good to kind of touch upon some of the comebacks that were mentioned by people before the show. We have been going mental on forums, groups, all the above, trying to get people's opinions on what is their best comebacks. And we've got a few from some of our fans. Thank you for anybody who's provided it. We're going to start with a regular listener from the show, Sarah. And panellists. And yes, you'll hear from her next week. We'll tell you about that later. She's went for one we may mention, John Cena at the Royal Rumble. And Lionheart's return from his injury. She likes that. She likes real life comebacks as opposed to just your normal comebacks, which is a good one. I'm going the wrong way on my photos here. I am making a botch. Yeah, we've also got a Nick Simpson who says Shawn Michaels in 2002. And we've also had Amy Baker who said Seth Rollins at Extreme Rules in 2016. Some of these we may touch upon in more detail, by the way, so excuse me for going through them in a lot of quick detail. We've also had Daniel Walden who said Goldberg's last run, apart from how it finished with Kevin Owens. Chris Davis has also said the Hardy Boys. You alright there, Ross?
Sorry, I'm trying to eat a biscuit quietly.
I just looked up and saw Nathan's face. Paul Stevens says Sting. Various comebacks in time. Mm. We've also had people on Twitter as well. We think we had a Mr. Was it Mr. Cairns? Yeah, Killer King Cairns, who said Kane in 2000 when he came out badass like a monster. Triple H in 2002.
Oh, after his quad injury.
After his quad injury.
That was a belter.
That was
That was another one that wasn't announced ahead of time. That was just, he was so far ahead, you know, from injury. Mm-hmm. And it was so good.
We've also got Gregor, who says the great Khali in 2017.
What's wrong with you, Gregor?
Is this the same person said the next one, Ross? Greg Law? Is that the same person?
Gregor Ray was the one for the great Khali. Sorry, I've got biscuit in my mouth. Gregor Ray was the great Khali. Greg Law is the next one you're going to read.
Okay, and they said when Stone Cold came out during the invasion, even though there wasn't really much of a comeback, I'm not too sure, but he came out.
Stone Cold of old.
It's a comeback from the bar he was in.
Have we got any other ones? We've got Jamie Mason, who said Edge in 2010 at the Rumble.
Oh yeah,
regular panelist.
Yes, we've got Louise Westy, who also says John Cena at 2008 Royal Rumble. Billy Strachan also says Shawn Michaels in 2002.
What would Strack do?
Different Strack.
What would Strack do?
Different Strack, right? Different Strack.
Don't give me that.
We've got Fiona Mason, who jokingly says CM Punk in the year 3000.
I seriously hope WWE's around for the year 3000. That would be mad. And hopefully they can afford Pyro again.
Why do you care? Like, you're going to be there?
Busted will be here in the year 3000.
Not much has changed, but now the ring's underwater.
Who else we got? We've got David Fleming, who also says Triple H in 2002. It's a very common one, a lot of people saying that one. We've got Sean Smith, who said Brian Christopher in 2011.
I know, Sean, I'll be having words with him after the show.
What other ones have we got here? Stephen Louch, regular panellist on the show, has said a few ones as well. He's got Triple H for 2002 as well. He's got Undertaker American Badass, says it really refreshed him. Mm-hmm. Goldberg as well, and HBK, some popular ones in there. Who else have we got? We've got Chris Murray again saying Triple H, and again saying Shawn Michaels. A lot of ones in there.
Also, I've just been sent one by the Bart Gunn and McLeod household. Scott McLeod says Jericho in 08 and 16 for how he reinvented himself both times, mm-hmm. and Shawn Michaels in 2002, which seems to be a popular one.
Yes, some good ones there. We're going to thank you for everybody who's contributed and give us some their comebacks. We're going to go back around the panel in a wee minute and discuss some more, but first I'm going to hand over to the EP, who's going to talk about some the effects of social media on comebacks. So Kwaku, over to you.
Yeah, I thought I'd raise it because it was quite interesting when we were going through brainstorming for this show, and I thought I'd kind of raise up about the fact social media is playing quite a big part in some of these comebacks these days. And I was just looking to see from you guys if you think, as it is, do you think social media and journalistic reports and so on, do you think they help the cause towards comebacks, or do you think they rather hinder the reaction that is needed for them?
I think it definitely heightens anticipation for the comeback. I think what we saw with the Hardys at WrestleMania, they obviously did that, the Ring of Honor show the night before, and it kind of heightened up the expectancy for them to be at WrestleMania, I thought. But as the reaction to them appearing shown, it still got the massive reaction that they wanted.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I had a point there and I completely forgot, although I did get a message there from Sarah Greaves saying Tommaso Ciampa actually used Twitter for his comeback to build anticipation. He only tweeted when it was Johnny Gargano related, and it built and built and built to the point where, although it hinders a lot of things, Twitter, that did help it.
I suppose, yeah. I do see what she's saying there. It's like kind of used right. So, for example, in that stage, would you say using WWE releasing the fact that Daniel Bryan was coming back beforehand, do you think it worked in that instance?
In that instance, yes, because I think people, they tend to be a bit casual with sort of watching WWE programming these days, SmackDown included, and I don't think the viewing figures would have had such a spike, had they not disclosed Bryan that Bryan was cleared to wrestle. So had they announced it beforehand, then they would know that more people would want to tune in to see it. And it was the day before as well it came out. Uh-huh. So, I mean, perfect timing.
I disagree. I would have liked to have seen it live on SmackDown, because I think people would have tuned in, because it would have been that quickly over social media. The buzz would have been electric.
But I think from WWE's perspective, I think they wanted people to try and watch the whole show to see what would transpire. Rather than, say if it happened sort of halfway through the show, then that way they've missed half the show already, and now all of a sudden there's this big announcement and now everybody's tuning over. Why not just capitalise on everybody watching the whole show?
Not necessarily. If you think about the speed of social media, especially Twitter, somebody, if it goes live on Twitter, it's usually viral within
minutes.
So people aren't going to miss that much of it.
Yeah, see, that's...
And if they're going to record it, whatever, they can rewind it and watch it again. But I think it would have been electric, and I think SmackDown would have been the top show this week.
No, see, that's the thing. I think overall, social media actually hinders comebacks a bit. Mm-hmm. Well, more often than not, but not. That's not to say, the way you discussed Tommaso Ciampa's use of social media. That was really good. Mm-hmm. But say, for example, if we're talking, say, The Rock's comeback, the place popped because like no other, because nobody was expecting it. And I think that was around the time where WWE didn't use social media mm-hmm. as much, and I don't think the fans were either. So I think, you know,
they were still using tout.
Aye, tout, yeah. But yeah,
what happened they were, to that?
They got rid of it, I think.
Wait, yeah. WCW.
No one used it.
But yeah, if the dirt sheets had picked up on that, like, and all the journalistic articles have picked up, yeah, The Rock's been seen backstage. He's mm-hmm. been expected to be announced. Then you think, oh, just ruin the surprise then. Same with, like, you know, but the way they handled the Hardys, that was good, because, you know, they didn't bring them into the show until about after the show had started. Yeah. But there's a lot of things, you know, that kind of kills the buzz. You know, it's like what kind of matches will be announced, like who's going to be in particular matches or who's rumored to be. But that's because you get insiders going on backstage and you get reviews from Dave Meltzer, PW Insider.
Yeah.
But places like that, I think, you know, they sometimes break the news too soon, and it kind of dampens the hype a bit. Maybe that's why so many people are, like, tuning away from watching the live shows.
Even on that, like, last month I saw a website basically put a spoiler on what's going to be the WrestleMania card, and it's accurate apart from two matches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, like, pretty much, it's I would say it's 80%. Whatever, I'm not the stats guy. It's as accurate apart from two matches.
Although I think we all knew Lesnar Roman Reigns was coming about 14 months in advance. So I think that's the only exception.
They announced the day after WrestleMania last year. Just said, oh, by the way, next year it's Lesnar Roman.
Yeah, no, it's again with YouTube as well. That's I think that's how a lot of people tend to watch the shows nowadays. They tend to just watch small snippets of it rather than people actually recording it on their TVs and then watching it later. Mm-hmm. So social media in that aspect, you know, they're getting so heavily involved with Facebook, YouTube, etc., and posting little snippets. It covers all the key points. You know, they've got their top 10 moments every week, and I think that kind of lowers the buzz for, you know, people wanting to tune in and see all these great moments happen spontaneously.
Right. Well, see, on that, like, I've got two just quick final points. The last time I was genuinely surprised at a comeback was Shane McMahon returning on
yeah.
Raw
mm,
when
yeah.
Stephanie was going to do the McMahon family acceptance speech. But see, with the Daniel Bryan thing, if you're going to talk about, like, I'm going to talk about, like, Sami Zayn and Kevin Steen as they were old school in Ring of Honor. I think the way they would have preferred to have done it was, they come out to Daniel Bryan and just attack him, and everyone thinking that he's not medically cleared, and then suddenly Daniel Bryan attacks them and it gets them proper heat. Yeah. I think that's the way they would have preferred to have done
it.
I agree, and a lot of people would have bought into that.
Something else I want to say about the Twitter comeback. It's not so much it spoils it, it's the fact that certain aspects of Twitter delve into every wee detail. And it's sometimes you've no figured something out, and then all of a sudden it's like somebody's worked it out, like, oh, actually, well, he mentioned this and he used to team with this person, and then it's like, oh, actually that makes sense, you know, now he's this person's mystery partner's gonna be this guy, or oh, actually, yeah, he'll be back by this time because he referenced this. It's like people working things out for you that mm-hmm. WWE haven't basically told you about. They've worked it out months in advance, and it's like when it actually happens, it should have been a surprise. But it's like, no, somebody worked it out for me, somebody ruined it for me.
Yeah, a lot of good debate there on that topic, and it's one, if we had all show, we could carry on with it. But anybody who's got any opinions on social media and internet, how it's handled comebacks, give us a tweet at Suplex Retweet. Before we move on, a couple more people have give their comebacks to us. Gary Morris, he said Ricky Steamboat's comeback in 2009 from mm-hmm. WrestleMania 25, one that many people wouldn't think of.
Yep.
Kind of started the yeah, still got Jericho, it stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
David Armstrong is saying Mikey Whiplash at one of the more recent Fear and Lovins when he was in the Sumerian Death Squad in the body bag.
Oh yeah, fine.
Super yeah. one. I quite like that one as well. So that's what some of our fans have said. Let's get back to our panel. Let's go back to Nathan. What have you got for us?
Got something to choose from, but the one I'm going to choose, I was genuinely shocked by, and that was Lesnar's return in April 2012 after Mania 28.
Oh,
I don't watch UFC. I don't particularly like it. The only thing I do watch is when Kirkcaldy's own Stevie Ray is fighting. So I didn't really know about I didn't really know about Lesnar's contract situation or anything.
Not even Paul Craig.
Is that?
Not even Paul Craig. Nah.
What I like Paul Craig too.
What a win Paul Craig had recently. What a win.
Yeah. I'll root for all the Scottish guys. But like I said, I didn't really watch like UFC like thoroughly to know what his contract situation was. I know he did a deal to appear for the video game, but I still didn't think he would come back. And then when you just heard that iconic first note of his music, just the pop, unreal. The only bad thing was that we saw Brock Lesnar guy, and we see him every single time. That's the only bad thing from that night.
That Brock Lesnar guy ruined AJ Styles, John Cena. It was the first time Mr. TNA had met Mr. WWE, and he sat in the front row pointing in fake disbelief at both of them. And I just honestly, I wanted to throw a shoe at my telly just so I didn't have to see him.
So they've got a habit of that, you know, just picking out really mental fans in the crowd. You know, like you see when New Day announced that, you know, there's a Fatal 4-Way guy, people were just going like, what? It's like, oh, really? That's just a bit over.
Yeah, but he milks it, but we're not going to give him that the publicity he deserves. He doesn't deserve on this show. The Brock Lesnar return came in 2012, as Nathan said. For him, they're not familiar with it. Brock had been away for 8 years from WrestleMania 20.
A long time by wrestling.
Yeah, he'd been in New Japan wrestling. He'd been in the NFL, which that was why he left and flopped big time. He was obviously in UFC, where he became an even bigger star. So his comeback was major because it was headline news because of his spell in the UFC. It was one that had been rumoured for a few months for a couple of reasons. One, his UFC contract, he announced his UFC contract was done. He wasn't fighting for them anymore. And there was also a certain stare down with a certain wrestler, a certain undead wrestler who we talked about earlier on, The Undertaker.
Mr. Right Dead Fred.
What gives you the right to call him the Right Dead Fred? He is a legend.
Just trying to make
sense. And you botch a quiz.
I'm just going to stay quiet now.
I've done it. Success. All kidding aside, Dave. It was great because it was kind of expected throughout the night. I think as well, is it one of the big, obviously it's became the recent thing, the Raw after Mania returns. That's one of the biggest ones we've kind of seen. We had a few in earlier years, but it wasn't kind of referenced as a big thing. But that kind of started the whole trend of Raw after Mania is the place to be.
They had the whole Yes Chants going on all night as well in support of Bryan's 18-second loss.
Yeah. It was a fantastic Raw that night. I mean, Lesnar coming back kind of was the pinnacle of it, I say. I mean, it was helped by the fact that Big Match John was the one in the ring, crying over his loss.
It's fact he was calling out The Rock. Everyone expected The Rock to come out, and then obviously
Brock comes out.
Yeah,
he referenced it as well. The fans were chanting. Sorry, I'm a bit bunged up here. We want Brock, and he's like, interesting. I'd rather speak to The Rock. And The Rock had been out earlier in the night and get the biggest pop of the night, and as soon as he said, no, I want The Rock, not Brock, the fans were expecting Brock. They booed him mercilessly. And you know, that broke my heart a wee bit, you know. But then the place went absolutely insane, minus that one knob. I pointed to Nathan because of his point. I didn't mean Nathan. I like Nathan.
Glad you clarified.
I like Nathan, he gets my name. But it was an absolute great result.
I think Michael Cole summed it up best. The American Airlines Arena has come unglued. Like, they just absolutely lost it.
Yeah, I've criticised Cole before in the podcast, but he does come out with occasional good line.
Similar to when Nathan talked about the Hardys, do you think they kind of, the first year anyway, they didn't handle Brock's return very well, or do you think it was well done?
It was almost came off the rails since it started with the loss to Cena.
Extreme rules, yeah.
Losing the first match back, it didn't really feel... feel big, you know. I mean, I don't think he really hit his stride until he broke the streak. I think that was the big thing, obviously.
See, if he had come out swinging like that in 2012, I think it would go down as probably the most dominating comeback ever. Like, had he done what he did to John Cena at SummerSlam, if he did that at Extreme Rules, that would be so much better than what happened to him, what actually happened to him.
I think the thing as well, they used it twice. They used it when he lost to Cena, he quit, and then he came back and broke Triple H's arm.
Twice.
And I think the second time he quit again, I think it was post-SummerSlam. If you knew Brock wasn't going to be around every week, you should have had him maybe interviewed after that Raw and shown up on the next week Raw and just say, right, I'll show up when I want, where I want, because that's kind of his gimmick now. Yeah. I'll show up when I want. That should have been his gimmick straight off the bat. He'll show up maybe at a pay-per-view and ruin a crappy match. He'll show up eventually at SummerSlam and that'll be his first match.
Pull him a Cartman card. Yeah. I do what I want.
In hindsight though, there was a good thing to him not doing Suplex City until 2014. We might not have got our name.
No, absolutely not. Imagine what if he just did like Shining Wizards or something? That'd be something.
The Dungeons and Dragons podcast. Shining
hold on. Shining Wizards.
Why not?
Shining Wizards.
Well, it's just a running knee, isn't it?
Not as a name for the podcast.
Well, it might be a good podcast name. The Shining Wizards podcast.
I honestly have a feeling that's going to be like a Lord of the Rings or a Dungeons and Dragons or Skyrim podcast somewhere in the world. The Shining Wizards.
Skyrim.
On a brief side note, on Twitter here, Alberto's Dream is trending, and I had a brief worry that it was something to do with Del Rio, then it was just I realised it was a horse, so we're alright. That was a terrible comeback, talking about comebacks. Del Rio's one. Oh, in 2003.
That was another one. They didn't.
2013.
13, yeah.
They didn't capitalise on the pop.
Oh, 2015, sorry. Yeah. 2015.
They didn't capitalise on the pop. Like, they just had him fight with Seb Cole before he left. Sorry, I'm stumbling on my words here. Like Del Rio in an airport bar. Well, but there goes Del Rio ever coming on the podcast. Right now. No, but they didn't capitalise it. They had him feud with some guy and then come back, and it was like in the middle of the whole political landscape was like, now Donald Trump being quite racist towards Mexican people, and all of a sudden Donald Trump's best pal is putting a stable together where a right-wing American and a proud Mexican join forces.
I mean, that pairing just didn't make any sense whatsoever. Because I remember, like, I think it was WrestleMania 29 that was the big feud for the World Heavyweight Championship. Mm. It was Zeb versus Swagger. Oh, no, sorry, Del Rio versus Swagger.
Yeah, and Zeb versus
Zeb versus Mexico, yeah.
Digression. Also, for many people to know, we've gave Ross extra responsibilities recently on the podcast. We might have to rescind that after those comments. But we're going to go back now to Ross. Ross, what's your next one?
Well, mine's actually one I don't think a lot of people will have, for the simple fact it was the second half of this comeback. Because right. The start of it was absolutely dire. But Batista in 2014. Because his WrestleMania, his heel run from Elimination Chamber to WrestleMania was great. The main event of WrestleMania, you know, as much as we remember Daniel Bryan's big moment, we forget that Batista and Randy Orton are really good big match wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And then you had two absolutely crack matches with Evolution and The Shield. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people give Dave a lot of the flack for the 2014 Rumble win. In the space of 3 months, he put over Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and
Ambrose.
Forgot his name now.
Dave, I never knew you did that.
I think he was meaning big Dave Batista.
Of course, I know that. I'm just enjoying. Yeah, I'm on a roll here.
To be honest, for a second, I thought he was talking to me there.
Big Dave done so well, and then he came back to help fund and host Eat Sleep. No, but right between filming Bond and Avengers. No, but
yeah, that was the plan though for his comeback though. It was come back, win the Royal Rumble, win the title at Mania, promote Guardians of the Galaxy, tea and coffee for everybody.
Yeah, and it was the
what?
It was the sort. I think they had the same idea with what they did with The Rock. The Rock had. It was G.I. Joe and Snitch out in January and February when he won the title, and he attended those premieres and attended all the late night shows with the WWE title. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the same plan for him, because Batista was going to be in all these late night shows. Mm-hmm. It was going to be a case of, right, we want that title everywhere. But obviously the surge of Daniel Bryan was just too much.
I mean, the comeback, it was started at early 2014. Batista came back.
Yeah.
Had an awkward kind of feud with Del Rio. I thought it was
very awkward. Yeah.
We're mentioning him quite a bit tonight. But yeah.
Alberto's Dream.
The 3 grand on Alberto's Dream. No, the first half of it was horrendous, but once we passed Elimination Chamber, and he had the sort of mini feud, I think it was Dolph Ziggler and somebody else, he had a sort of mini feud with, because they were like indie darling fan favourites.
No, I think you'll get mixed up with Sheamus.
No, he came back after WrestleMania 31, but he fought Ziggler on an episode of SmackDown, and it was, I'm going to go through all your favourites, and he went through the sort of, he went through Fandango, who was doing
the Fandango.
I think he beat Bryan on an episode of Raw as well.
It was the one in Chicago where they were tweeting Hijack Raw.
Yeah.
And during the authorities promo, all they did was just boo loudly during whenever Triple H or Stephanie were talking.
So he went through Ziggler, Fandango. Ziggler and Fandango's in the Darlings. Like, picture that in 2018. No, but he went through the two. He beat Daniel Bryan clean. Everybody thought, well, they'll put Daniel Bryan in the match, but they won't give us it. he put over, he tapped out to Brian, he put him over, he took the pin 2 months in a row for Roman Reigns. You know, I think it was a good comeback. The second half of the first half was a bit of a disaster.
And we got Blutista.
We got
Blutista.
Yes. Why is Balor not called Blue Aller or something like that now?
I think because Blue Aller isn't as catchy.
Blue Balor, yeah.
I think there's been a thing that a few of them with Balor.
I was saying
actually
at the time, like, why is there no catching on?
Yeah.
Blues clubs or something.
Blues Ballers.
Blues Club.
Batista just
the good Blues Brothers. Blues
Batista Brothers, just get criticised mercilessly for that return, but the second half of it, I thought, for mid-February to when he left in July, I thought it was absolutely crap.
Yeah, I think they've made memes of it as well, because Triple H and Randy Orton were both wearing black that night, and they said, and the meme was like, Dave, you had one job. It's like, no, the dress code is black, not blue.
I mean, theoretically speaking here, I mean, since then, Batista's became arguably one of the biggest stars on the box office, you know, with Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it's been brilliant.
If it wasn't for The Rock, I think he'd be the biggest wrestling success in Hollywood.
Could you imagine what the reaction would be if he was to come back now? I mean, he's talked about it, he wants to maybe come back. I mean, do you think it'd be a bit of a different reaction from the crowd now?
Yeah. Probably, yeah. As long as he doesn't, like, win the Royal Rumble or hijack the main event of WrestleMania, we'll be fine.
Well, I think he got cheered his first night, and then he got cheered. He was announced 2 weeks in a row as a vignette. Crowd were gone mental.
Oh,
he
yeah,
came back,
yeah.
He get absolutely one of the best reactions of 2014, pardon me. And then once he won the Rumble, it was a
case of, it was the Rumble was the tipping point.
It was kind of like Goldberg and The Rock when they beat the main stars, the part-timers beating the main stars for the title. Mm-hmm. That's when they started to get a bit of, actually, we're not sure about your comeback.
He was one of two guys who had a bad night at the Rumble that night. Obviously him, another one was Rey Mysterio.
Oh. Yeah.
Poor Ray.
Ray get booed because you're not Daniel Bryan. You'll never be him.
The potential, actually, talk about Rey Mysterio, of him versus Will Ospreay and him versus Marty Scurll. End of his watch, New Japan.
Ooh.
Amazing. But yeah, that was a surprising one, Ross. Didn't think we were going to actually bring that one up. So yeah, thanks for that. We'll move on to the big dog. Alan, what have you got for us?
I had a whole list, and then just while everyone was talking, one just came into my mind there. Triple H calling it Taker for WrestleMania 27, and not a single word was spoken.
That is actually quite good.
Yeah,
that was good. Came out, nobody knew Triple H was coming.
That was a double return.
It was a double return. Yeah, everybody was focusing on Taker, and that's what the promos were.
Nobody knew Triple H was coming. He walks in, stares him down, and then just points at the WrestleMania.
Doesn't even point. No, he just stares at it.
And the next thing, they both turn around. The fans lose their nut.
Did Taker not do the hand gesture across the throat, and then Triple H did the DX.
Taker kind of went to walk away, and then he turned around and did that, and then the cross chop. I mean, it was interesting because you talked about the vignettes before it. They were originally meant to be for Sting, apparently. And then Sting backed out the deal quite late on, and then they went to take.
Then TNA did the same vignette to bring Sting back.
Yeah, all it was just like a warehouse in the rain, and a date on the screen saying this is what's happening.
Well, it was kind of like, obviously, if Sting can't be there, who's the only guy really in WWE can really do it? And at that point, we didn't have Bray Wyatt, so Undertaker was the only guy who could do it. But yeah, as Alan said, Undertaker come back, it was like, oh yeah, he's came back. He's done that a couple of times. We're kind of expecting that, but the Triple H one out of nowhere, because he hadn't been there since April of the year before when Sheamus took him out.
That's right, Extreme Rules 2010, Sheamus took him out, and then he made, I think, only one appearance, and that was at a live event, fan appreciation night or something, and this is when he was filming The Chaperone. Great film.
That amazing film featuring someone from Modern Family.
Yeah, and the only time we saw him come back on screen was for that Undertaker promo. It was madness.
I mean, you talk about these, obviously, Sheamus got a really raw deal on that comeback, because Triple H obviously put Sheamus over when he left, and then he came back to this big fanfare and then put Sheamus through a table, and Sheamus was buried.
Well, he was King Sheamus at that point. He was King of the Ring that year.
But yeah, I mean, we talked with Quacko there about the shock factor. I mean, you think that shock factor helped that to be as big as it was? Obviously Triple H was a big star, but the unexpected nature of it,
again, 9 month absence, you know, I think nobody saw it coming. That's what the best thing about it was. And the fact that everybody was focused on Taker, that they didn't pay attention to.
Exactly,
I think, like what Dave was saying, that's basically summed up my point perfectly. Just the fact that it was they'd won a similar one a couple of years later. It was Miz and Jericho returned on the same night, and then Bray Wyatt took out both of them. So it was like, and he'd been away for a couple of weeks, so it was like a triple return. Mm-hmm. But obviously, this one is the more memorable one because it led to a classic Mania match.
Yeah, oh, the Mania match was brilliant. The best, easily the best match of that card at WrestleMania 27.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's really hard to kind of top that. And obviously, they had the match the year later, End of an Era. So, such a great series.
It was a diamond in the rough kind of match, you know. WrestleMania 27 wasn't very memorable as a whole, but that match sort of stood out amongst the rest.
I mean, let's kind of talk, kind of, we've kind of mentioned, the fans have mentioned it too, as the listeners have mentioned it too, Triple H's return in 2002. If we were to go in terms of comparison, I'll go around you all here quickly. What was the better, the one, this one in 2011 or the one in 2002? I'll start with Gulak.
I don't know, it's kind of hard to say because, I mean, I think the Madison Square Garden one, the 2002 one, that pop was electric.
Oh, the pop was brilliant. Yeah. Pop was so good.
And, you know, Triple H was still full-on heel mode at the time, so he still sort of came back as a heel. And then he went on to win the Royal Rumble. So, and I think that's sort of what took him took off a bit more. But for the 2011 one, he was sort of there for until about sort of middle of the Punk program. And yeah, after that, he just sort of disappeared again, mm-hmm. right? And but was more incorporated into the COO type role on screen character.
So what one was better then?
Probably the Madison Square Garden one, 2002, but only just.
Alan, are you going to go with 2011 or 2000?
I'm going to go 2011. I just think 2002. There's always an expectation he's going to come back. Whereas 2011, nobody's seen it. Thought he backstage now, CEO. He's not going to really be that much public appearance.
No, definitely.
2011.
Ross.
I think because I watched 2011 live, I'm going to go with 2011. I've seen 2002, but I knew about it already.
Yeah.
Because like Raw was here on like a Saturday morning.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and I was watching the one Alan mentioned live, and it was just such a focused on Undertaker, and then just boom, there's Triple H.
Yeah, great. Nathan?
Same reason as Ross, yeah, 2011.
Yeah. Kwaku, you got any thoughts?
Both. you put me on the spot here now. Come back to me, I'll tell you.
We'll come back to you at the end of the show. That's the one we're gonna, I need you remember and judge him on that. But yeah, Alan,
that has come back.
Another one I didn't expect, Alan. Thank you very much for that one. Dave, we'll go back to you. What's your next one?
Well, the ones I've got here, I think they've all been mentioned by our listeners as well, but one that I would like to pick up on, I think Sarah mentioned it before, it was John Cena at the 2008 Royal Rumble.
Oh.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, at Madison Square Garden. He The story behind that was it was the week before No Mercy 2007, and he was in a match against Mr. Kennedy. Went for his usual arm hip toss kind of thing, but what he tore his pectoral muscle, and Orton sort of tried to caused the injury with the RKO on the table. But then he was announced to be he was going to be out for 6 to 12 months with that injury. He comes back at the Royal Rumble 4 months later, so he's like at least. He's at least 3 to 4 months ahead of schedule, and nobody saw it coming. And this was a time, you know, social media wasn't a big thing. Like, you know, Facebook wasn't as prominent as it is now. YouTube was only around for a couple of years, but WWE hadn't capitalized on all these platforms yet. So I think the sheer shock factor of Cena coming out at number 30 as well, of all the numbers, bearing in mind that Triple H came out at 29, and he eliminated 6 people by that point in the space of about a minute, and everybody was thinking, right, Triple H is going to win another one, and then all of a sudden, John Cena comes out.
And Alan Lloyd Jones Jr.
out comes Alan Jones. If you don't get that, listen to our last week's quiz episode and you'll see why.
Okay, so on this John Cena return, we kind of talked about shock factors again in the last one. I mean, this kind of cemented John Cena as the Superman type John Cena. The fact his freakish ability to come back from injuries so quickly.
Triple H is
he's an X-Man.
He's Wolverine.
The Royal Rumble. I mean, we kind of. The Royal Rumble's kind of a thing that you get all the big moments now at the Royal Rumbles.
I was going to say Edge's come back as well, I think Cena's was definitely the most shocking.
I think Cena's was the first major one, just like, oh god, it's John Cena.
Triple H's face through the whole story.
Yeah. It's like jaw dropped and everything.
Yeah. See, the best thing about that is the whole arena, although they've been proper anti-Cena and you know, the 2 years before, they're going insane, except for one guy who's quite visible at the barrier, who has a Triple H t-shirt on and quite frankly wants Triple H to win. And honestly, go back and watch the closing sequence of that match. It's a wee baldy guy and he's absolutely going off his nut every time Triple H nearly gets seen over. He's absolutely losing the plot.
But no, it was brilliant. The fact, I think it's probably still to this day the best reaction John Cena's ever got, and then he got booed mercilessly the minute he got in the ring.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, Cena, boo Cena.
I think it was like, I think they were like,
what, Cena? Are you kidding?
Like that kind of thing.
And it's like, oh my god, he's back. And then he kind of realizes, wait a minute, this is John Cena.
We're supposed to hate him.
There was one lit up for the lead up to WrestleMania 32 when anti-Roman Reigns was at its peak. It was off TV for 3 weeks. And he appealed. The pop is deafening. And then next match, like, we're meant to hate him, boo!
But yeah, do you know why he was written off that week as well? Or he was written off for weeks?
Oh, he had to have a nose job or something like that. he broke his orbital bone, but everybody made it look like a nose job.
No, I think it was a work. Because everybody, like, there was a clip that showed Byron Saxton passing him, like, a little sachet of blood or something. Yeah. But do you know why I think that was? They were going through Chicago in one of those weeks that he was off.
Yeah, it was Chicago, Philly, and New York.
Yeah, like very diehard fan crowds who would just torn him to shreds. And yeah. I think the guests that have thought it had been bad publicity.
I'm going to quickly go over this one for you. Quick opinion on it in terms of comebacks. Best ever Royal Rumble comeback. Nathan.
Jericho 2013.
Oh, yeah.
Ross.
I couldn't even think of one there, and then Nathan just summed it up. What the that or tied with this year's glorious return of the Hurricane.
Alan?
Oh, I think, just for shock fact, I'm going to go this year for Mysterio.
Ooh, that was a good one. I didn't
see that on my list as well.
Didn't see that one coming. That doesn't top the Hurricane, though.
Nah, you took the words
out. I'm sorry, I love the Hurricane. He's brilliant.
What's up with that?
Yeah, no, I have to agree with Alan as well. I think Rey Mysterio in the Royal Rumble was a huge shock. But apart from, since we've just discussed Cena, I think that's probably still my favourite. Mysterio is probably second favourite.
Bubba Ray Dudley, my favourite.
I like that one as well.
That was a good one.
Bubba Ray Dudley, the crowd reaction was brilliant.
It's the only good thing about that Rumble.
And that brings us on to our final moment on the comebacks, which is mine, 2015. But no, we're missing one great return in 2016. He went on to become champion last year. What's his name? Jinder Mahal? Nah, I joke. The one I'm talking about is the year before, 2015, the Dudley Boys on Raw after SummerSlam.
Oh yeah, no, I watched that show live. I literally just jumped out of my seat when I heard that theme. And I saw the pyro happen. I think, whoa, what's going on here? And then music comes on. Wow.
Ross mentioned it earlier on. The comeback overall was terrible. They mucked them up so badly. But this one moment was absolutely amazing.
I would recommend maybe not watching it back, though.
How
so? See, when you watch it live and you're cheering and you kind of hear the commentary. This was pre-Titus Worldwide when he learnt to talk on a microphone. But Titus and Darren Young are on commentary.
Oh,
they just butchered it, like, bring him on, like, shut up. It would have made more sense if he'd done the bark thing. It would have been more sense if he'd done Pancake Patterson. But honestly, it's such a good comeback, just marred by such bad commentary by the primetime players. I'm glad Darren Young got fired.
I mean,
controversial.
That was an amazing comeback. I've got a few ones here. I've got to quickly, whilst we're coming towards the end of the show, there's a quick few ones I'm going to mention and get your opinions on them quickly. Hogan and the rest of the NWO in 2002.
That was on my list, yeah.
That was on my list.
Amazing, we got that great match.
I think the one at 5th WrestleMania 31 as well, the NWO comeback to save Sting.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. DX that night as well, yeah.
No, that didn't make sense, because Sting not against the NWO.
Yeah, but for sheer nostalgia, it was amazing.
Yeah, come on.
Nothing I mean, that match
needs sense. It's a greater good of WWE versus WCW.
Yeah. I mean, right.
Nathan mentioned this in pre-show, probably on his list as well. We talked about X-Pac in 1998, just for what it meant to the company at that time, because he was such a statement that he's came back to screw over WCW and join DX was brilliant. Kwaku mentioned this as well, Shane O'Mac in 2016.
Watching Raw on delay, because I was watching it when it aired, but I don't like watching the adverts, so I was about half an hour behind, and I got a text from one of my mates, "Are you watching Raw?" Like, no, why, what's up? He's like, text me when you get to it. Just text me when you get to it.
Another one we briefly touched upon in the show is in Ultimate Warrior's return at WrestleMania. Was it the same Warrior?
That's like the conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Like, wait, Undertaker and Kane are the different person. Like, not
What are you doing? It's the X-Files theme. Many of our
listeners... What was it? That's No, X-Files is... you're sounding like the ice cream van.
I'll have a night and then with Flake Gulak.
Many of our listeners mentioned this as well. Shawn Michaels in 2002 was absolutely brilliant because he didn't think he'd be back and he was back. A couple of ones I've got here that was surprising, but just because how decent a run they had after it was good. Rikishi, 1999-2000.
Yeah.
Oh,
because obviously he'd been so many characters.
Fatu, the Sultan.
We could technically count Kane in that one in 1998 if we're talking about that.
Yeah.
Because I was 1997, sorry, all the comebacks he had. I thought Bossman 98 was quite decent because of how bad his first one was. Stone Cold Steve Austin's return in 2000.
Got another one as well.
There's so many. I mean, is there any ones quickly I've not mentioned just before?
Cactus Jack in 2000.
Just for the amazing matches with Triple H alone.
That was like the first pay-per-view I saw was the Royal Rumble, so that was the first like main event.
Mm-hmm. So you got title to see May Young?
Lucky. Scarred. Scarred.
I mean, any other ones quickly?
Goldberg.
I've got one for a Rumble comeback.
What's that?
Sami Zayn's return to the main roster to take out Kevin Owens in 2016.
Can we say Diesel at the Royal Rumble as well, just for Matt Stryker's reaction?
I've got that on my list. Booker and Diesel in 2011.
One just came to my mind. Booker T at the 2011 Royal Rumble.
Ross Lutler just said that.
You said Diesel.
No, I said Booker, and then you came. We mentioned Diesel. Your light bulb kind of went on. I knew Booker was coming. I was already.
Yeah, I was in the zone. I
just kind of went so, Book, and then pulled back because I knew you were going to say Booker T.
So yeah. It's clear there's so many great comebacks I get to talk to, but it's hard to get them through in 90 minutes. If anybody else has got any other ones, feel free to get us to it on Twitter at Suplex Retweet. Quacko, we're going to push you on the Triple H answer now.
Oh my god. 11.
11?
Yes.
There we go. Brilliant. Right, so that has been our Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet best comebacks. Now, the moment you've all been waiting for, we've teased it throughout the show. If you were on our Facebook and Twitter over the weekend, you notice we have something special planned for next week here. Yes, we're going to be doing 8 special podcasts here at Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet for WrestleMania week. Yes, we're going to do a succession of pods on the show. We're going to be doing our usual live one here next week where we'll be outlining the main title matches. So we're going to be talking about Brock and Reigns and Shinsuke and AJ. We're also going to be potentially talking about Cena Undertaker. It looks like it's going to happen. And a couple of the other matches. Plus, we'll be getting some of the results from Dave's prediction sweepstakes.
Yes, I'm running a sweepstake for predictions.
Winner gets Ross's belt.
Oh, indeed you do not.
Your belt's on the line.
No, you get a shot at Ross.
It's a hardcore championship. It's defended at all times.
24/7.
You can't get it if I take it home with me. It's in my, it's my house. Scott, guard this with your life.
It's my house.
Exactly.
It's
my damn house.
We have got a show outlining some of the undercard matches. You're going to get that on the Monday. We've also got some special ones. First, on Tuesday, we'll be talking about Daniel Bryan's return. His match was announced officially last night, so it's happening. David will be hosting that, so please bear with him. He's only on for half an hour. On the Thursday, we're going to be talking about Ronda Rousey. So, yeah, Ronda Rousey. It's been mixed responses. We're going to talk about that in a bit more detail. Friday, we're talking about the best of the indies, so all the other stuff that's going on at WrestleMania weekend. Saturday is the debut in the hosting chair of the EP, Kwaku Aji. We'll be talking about NXT TakeOver.
Does that mean I actually get introduced properly because I'm hosting it?
Yes, you do.
Alright, unless I forget to introduce myself.
No, I'm watching Mania.
Well, I'm Drew Gulak.
But it's going to kick off on Sunday, where Stephen Louch returns to host, where we're going to be talking about all the women's matches, bar Ronda, of course. We're going to be talking about the historic Women's Battle Royal, which had more controversy than anything because of trophies and names. We're not going to talk about the trophy.
Can we discuss the name?
On Sunday's show.
Right.
Yes. So, Raw show, we're going to that show. You looking forward to that one?
I am, yeah. my first show on Eat Sleep Suplex Repeat was a Women's Revolution one, and I was absolutely horrendous on it, so I'm looking for a bit of redemption.
You've came a long way, Ross. I'll give you that really one. I really have. So that is, there will not be live other than next week's Wednesday one, so to get that content, you need to subscribe to us on iTunes or Anchor, depending what you're on. So subscribe to that now, and you'll get all those special podcasts. So we'll hear from us on Sunday for the first of that, and we're back on live on Wednesday. But from the team at Suplex Retweet, I've been Stephen Wilson.
I've been Nathan Fisher.
I've been Ross McLeod.
I've been Alan McLucas.
David Hockney.
And from myself and the EP, Kwaku Aji.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We will hear from you on Sunday. Goodbye.
This coming WrestleMania week, Eat, Sleep, Suplex Retweet brings you a series of special podcasts documenting all the goings on at WrestleMania week, from the matches to the wrestlers to Ronda Rousey and Daniel Bryan's return. We have you covered here at Suplex Retweet. Subscribe now on iTunes and Anchor to catch all this exclusive content.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.